Welcome to Torah Simecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Racheli Lovglass, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra Perek Vav. Yesterday, we learned how the Jews restarted their construction project due to the help of the arrival of Haggai and Zechariah, the new Nevi'im, on the scene, only to be met with opposition yet again. This time, the opposition is from Tatnai, the local governor, who attempts to verify whether or not, indeed, the Jews do have Persian permission to build. Miraculously, as we saw, the Jews were not halted while the verification process takes place, and Tatnai, in the interim, dispatches a letter of complaint to Darius, the king at the time, in the year 522 BCE, is when he became king, and when they write the letter, it's the year 520, it's the second year of his kingship. And today in Perek Vav, we're going to examine the results of that letter. As I said yesterday, many of the prakim, especially the ones that are letters, are written in Aramaic. So the response from Daryavesh back to Tatnai, which is also in Aramaic, we're really going to focus on the English. Essentially, the letter, as he responds back, lets us know that the wager that the Jews had, I guess, kind of made in their own minds really paid off. Although Tatnai had tried to stop the building, instead it only got better for the Jews. Not only is Darius going to locate Cyrus's declaration and then send a letter to support the Jews' right to continue building, Tatnai is going to be told that he's going to have to provide the animals, the wheat, the salt, the wine, and the oil, and other forms of payment from the king's treasury to help them continue the rebuilding process and also to maintain the cost of sacrifices going forward. The governor and his colleagues, seeing that their maneuver to halt the Jews' project backfires, are going to grudgingly have no choice but to carry out the king's command. That essentially is what Perek Vav is about, but I want to focus on just a couple of pieces. So first of all, we're told back in the beginning of Perek Vav in Pasuk Bet that the documentation that Daryavesh is looking for to see and verify the Jews' claim that Cyrus had given them permission to build, that documentation is found in a city known as Achmeta, one of the capital cities of the Persian Empire, and it's the place where the winter palaces are for the wealthy. What's interesting about this letter that's found is, if you remember back when we studied Sefer Ezra Perek Aleph together, Cyrus, when he initially gave his declaration to return to the land, we were told that he was given Bekol v'gam b'michtav, both a voice declaration and that in a letter. Back in Perek Aleph, we studied the verbal decree in Hebrew to the Jews directly, and here in Perek Vav is an actuality where we see the written decree, which has not been found up until this point. As an aside, for those of you that are familiar with the Cyrus cylinder, the written decree that's read from the city in Achmeta, that's found in our Perek Vav, is not the same as the Cyrus cylinder. The Cyrus cylinder is yet another version of the decree, which is not only for the Jews, but is for basically all of the exiled people that were conquered by Persia, that Cyrus gives them permission to go back. That was found in the 1800s in Baghdad by an archaeologist, but our Prakim deal only with the decree for the Jews. So back in Perek Vav, where I am right now, Daryavesh finds this written declaration from Cyrus, and I actually want to read through this declaration in English instead of the Aramaic, because I want to focus on just one or two differences between this and what we saw in Perek Aleph with the verbal decree. So I'm going to translate the Aramaic into English. In the first year of Cyrus the king, Cyrus made a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be built, let the place where they offer sacrifice, and let the foundations there be strongly laid, the height being 70 cubits and the breadth being 70 cubits, with rows of great stone and rows of timber, and let the expenses be given out of the king's house. Pasuk Hey, and also let the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple, which is at Jerusalem, be brought from Babylon and restored back to the temple, which is at Jerusalem, everyone to his place, and you shall put them in the house of God. What's very, very fascinating here are some of the differences that you don't see in Perek Aleph. Essentially, in Perek Aleph, the verbal decree of the Cyrus Declaration was mandating for those Jews who are inspired to go back and rebuild the house of Hashem in Judea, and that everyone else who chooses not to make Aliyah, should support those that are making Aliyah, but no specific detailed information about the actual construction of the Beis HaMikdash is given. Here, we're assuming that the audience for the written decree that is being kept in the legal places of Achmata and the Persian Empire, potentially this was a document that maybe Cyrus even had the foresight to know that there will become a time where there's going to need to be proof for the Jews that this was some kind of a permission that he was given, that he had given the Jews. And it delineates much more specifics regarding the Mikdash than Perek Aleph. The Jews knew exactly what they needed to do, and Cyrus doesn't need to demand of them how and what to build, except that he's giving them the permission and that they are going to have the full support of Persia. Here in Perek Vav, we're told the size, we're told the resources are going to be given from Persia, and they're told also that the purpose of the house is to resume sacrificial worship, and the purpose of that might be because Cyrus is looking for longevity of his kingdom, and maybe he wants the Jews to daven on their behalf. We don't really know that for sure, but it's interesting to see the difference between Perek Aleph and Perek Vav, and that's most importantly due to the difference of the audience. Okay, so what happens when Tatnai receives this letter? As I said, he now grudgingly has to fulfill the wishes of Dariavesh, who is following the orders of what he found from Achmata, from the king Cyrus. And in Perak Vav, Pasuk Gimel, we're told that they begin, they're working again anew. Pasuk Yudal lets us know that they are being successful, that the returnees are matzlichin, are they're managing to succeed at the building process. It mentions again Haggai and Zechariah, that with the help of the prophecy of Haggai and Zechariah, they're managing to build. And it also says, Ubino, and they're building Vishachlelu, and they're finishing Mintam ala Yisrael, because of the decree that God had given them. So they're giving Hakaras HaTov, in this writing to Hashem, that they have gratitude to Hashem for really giving them the permission to build. Umitaim Koresh v'Daryavesh, and it's mentioning the decree of Cyrus and the decree of Daryavesh to allow them to build. Ve'artachashasta melech paras, and it also mentions, and also Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. Now, Artaxerxes is not even a king who has yet to rule in Persia. He will be the king in two eras. We'll get to him not even in Sefer Ezra, but only later on in Sefer Ezra, in Perek Chet, when we actually meet Ezra, in Perek Zion and Chet. So the fact that he's mentioned here, when really has nothing to do with this, is something that we can stall until later to discuss. And then Pasuk Tetvav, we're told that finally the Beis HaMikdash is complete in the third day of the month of Adar. Notice that it calls it Adar and it doesn't call it the 11th month. Up until now, we always see the Jewish months being referred to in the ordinal system, the first, the second, the third month. But here it takes on the secular name of Adar. And we're told that the temple is done by Gimel Adar in the sixth year of Daryavesh, which is in the year 516 BCE. Miraculously, a perfect 70 years from the destruction in 586, which is really the culmination of the prophecy originally to Yirmiyahu, that there would be the Babylonian Empire overtaking and ruling over the Jews for 70 years. And potentially this is the end of that 70 years of the destruction. What happens next? Pasuk Tetzayin lets us know that the Jews make a magnificent Chanukat Beit HaMikdash, a fabulous dedication party, and they're celebrating, and the word that uses is the word chedva, which means celebration and tremendous simcha. The reason why this is exciting is because up until now, we really didn't see at all the Jews celebrating the fact that they're partnering with Hashem to do anything. In Perek Gimel, when there were the youngsters who were celebrating the fact that they had built the foundations, they really didn't bring God into the picture. We saw them giving sacrifices, but that really was to appease the locals, to not think that they were building up a fortress to rebel against Cyrus. But here they're celebrating for the right reasons. They feel like they've been empowered and they've accomplished what they set out to do. And they get this inauguration celebration is complete with offering hundreds of sacrifices, not only burnt offerings that we saw in Perek Gimel, but they're also giving offerings like that are sin offerings, chatat, potentially because they're recognizing that they are now purifying themselves and spiritually they're back to a level that they're feeling more comfortable with. And then it lets us know that they are appointing priests and Levim to their roles like they need to be having, as you know, Pasuk Yud Chet tells us, just like from the book of Moshe, just like from the Chumash, from the Torah, the Jews are actually celebrating the way that they're supposed to. And then what happens almost, you know, just over a month later, after the celebration in Adar, we get to the month of Nisan, the month of Pesach. This is where the last few psukim of Perek Vav go back to being in Hebrew, starting Pasuk Yud Tet. We're told that the people of the exile make a Pesach offering on Arba Asar L'Chodesh HaRishon. And we're told that they do this only after purifying themselves. Because as we know, that the Korban Pesach can only be conducted in perfect purity. And both who had returned from exile and those who had remained behind in Judea that now had, you know, their familiar Jewish faces back, together they partook in the Pesach offering. And they too again joyously celebrate the seventh day Chag of Pesach, acknowledging that Hashem had kind of turned the heart of the king, as it says in the Pasuk, the Hasev Lev Melech Ashur Lehem. They're so happy, Ki Simcham Hashem, that Hashem made the king of Persia give them this kind of permission. They recognize how that had come about. And they are tremendously joyful and thankful that they're given that support and that ability to do that. That's kind of how the parak ends. In many respects, this parak's conclusion really brings full circle the first six prakim of Sefer Ezra, which I would, let's say, look at as the first half of the book. Because starting Perek Zion, which we'll look at tomorrow, that's when we finally meet our author, Ezra. He hasn't been a part of the story up until now. And just looking back at the first six prakim, we see that the Jews have really counteracted their enemies' schemes and fulfilled the Nevi'im's political building agenda and spiritual religious agenda. And as a result of that, instead of being forced to worship alongside the Shomronim that had requested to join the building process in Perek Dalet, whose true intention was really to undermine the Jews' work, the Jews finally managed to dissociate from these idolatrous groups and worship independently. And it's really beautiful to see that the very, very end of this section, the end of Perek Vav, lets us know that everything is happening b'simcha k'simcham Hashem, v'lechazek yedein, that Hashem is strengthening them. Because back in Perek Aleph, the only inspiration we saw came from Cyrus. We don't see at all Hashem's involvement, at least not visible. It wasn't a tangible involvement, right? We know anything that happens because of Hashem. But in Perek Aleph, he's kind of purposefully left out of the story. And here, the support that they're given by Persia only echoes what Hashem has given them, and they're cognizant of that fact. So essentially, Ezra, as the author, is coming full circle and letting us know the tremendous credit that these returnees, they might be as small in number relative to the Jews that are still in Persia, but because they listened to the prophets again, and because they fulfilled the words of the original prophet Yirmiyahu of 70 years, they have really come this far and managed to build Bayit Sheni. Ironically, it is ultimately due to the non-Jewish kings who had given them this permission, but they are cognizant of the fact that without Hashem overseeing all of it, they would not have managed to be this successful. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Rose Foreman, Rezel Rachel Bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.